Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Could this be gone in the first? He's caught it with another right hand. And Cornish is in desperate trouble already. And it's stormed. It's all over in 90 seconds. Anthony Joshua's biggest test on paper has turned into his quickest win.
Sunshine 106.8. Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. We'll be kicking off in a few moments with the papers and headlines, talking to our very own Ken Doherty live from the UK in racing. We'll be talking to racing pundit and Racing Post contributor Andrew Blair-White about the very latest news in horse racing. Also, we'll preview this weekend's racing and he'll share his lucky 15. Good winner last week with McSwinney as well, giving that tip. I think it was in the 1,000 guineas. In rugby, David Kelly of the Irish Independent will review the season with me and look forward to the upcoming Lions Tour. And in GAA, we're delighted to be joined in studio by GAA correspondent Declan Drake as he looks back at the Hurlers' win over Antrim and, of course, that fantastic draw between Kerry and Dublin. In football, we have Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call to preview tonight's Champions League final between Man City and Chelsea. What a cracker that's going to be. They'd also review Man United's defeat on penalties in what was an incredible game during the week, and looking forward to talking to Ken about that in just a moment as well. In golf, we're going to be chatting about Phil Mickelson's win last week with Deirdre Smith, and of course we'll look as well at Stephanie Meadows' performance in the Pure Silk Championships. And we have a guest this week, Richard Curtin, Coastal Programme Officer with the Clean Coast, to talk about cold water swimming and what Dublin beaches have received the Blue Flag Awards this year. And also our roving reporter, of course, Jane McNamara, was out and about this week and had a chat with swimmer Dara Green about his journey to the Olympics in Tokyo. So it's a really packed show, but as usual, you can get in touch with us by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. Don't forget, of course, that we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, and we're on Instagram as well, Dublin Talking Sport 1068. So as I said, time to talk to Ken now. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Come on, Reg. All good. Very, very good.
Excellent.
Inspired a little bit by Phil Mickelson last week. The Over 50 winning the tournament last week. It was absolutely fantastic, wasn't it? The PGA and how he finished and that, you know. So for Over 50s, you're not right there yet. But for me, it was very inspirational.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I you never said a truer word. I was out with the lads yesterday for my weekly game of golf out in Druids Glen, and I had 44 points, and I was absolutely burning. They were looking
was
at
that drinking. Was that drinking 44 points?
I'm a bandit big time. So it's coming right.
Fantastic.
I'm looking forward to when you get back here and I'll take a few quid off you. It won't be long now.
That's a fantastic, I tell you what, that's a fantastic score. Yeah, you know?
It is, and Druids and the place is magnificent, looking gorgeous as well. And I did well in my own club, Greystones, during the week as well. So yeah, it's great. Look, I mean, just being able to talk like that, the fact that we're able to say, oh, I got out for a game of golf, it's just brilliant. And
yeah,
of course, yesterday with the announcements as well, the fact that there's going to be a return to crowds in the fairly near future, you know, so it's all really positive stuff.
It's great news. Yeah, it is great news. And there's nothing like, you know, sport with crowds. I mean, we were very lucky at the World Championship. There was a pilot scheme, you know, but just to have the crowds there. And I mean, even on, as I said to you before, even on that final night, it was very, very emotional just because of what they created. And it would be the same when, you know, the people start going back to, I know the GAA is going to be opening up soon and going to be crowds at concerts and stuff like that. But the sporting events particularly, I mean, we saw what it was like for Phil Mickelson, the crowd following up the 80. A bit like Tiger Woods in the Masters a couple of years ago. And it was just really fantastic, you know. And
it kind of looked like it was out of control there at one stage. There was fans and everything.
I know that, but I thought it was great. You know, I thought actually at the end, I know he was into that meditation, and I don't know what you thought, but at the end I thought he was a little bit sort of overcome. I thought he was going to show a bit more emotion, you know, a bit more fist pumps, or really sort of milk the crowd a little bit, but it wasn't like that. He sort of just put his hands up, hugged his brother, yeah. And then just went off and signed this golf card. Like, you know, but it was just absolutely brilliant. I love Phil Mickelson. I've always had fun. He's always been one of my favourite players. And just his demeanour on the golf course, his personality, you know, he's such a gentleman. And even hitting, like, the big bombs and stuff like that, you know, the drivers, which yeah. was, he never held back. He was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he nearly blew it at one stage when he was water. We thought that was it.
He's coming unfolding
a bit here. I actually like him ever since he won me a nice few quid. I backed him by mistake. I was watching, I can't remember what tournament it was. I was watching it live on Sky, and he was going well. And some of the odds were kind of like, it was something like 35 or 30, you know, 3-1 or something. I was going, geez, he's a great price. He's like, he's in second place. He's a great chance of this. So I stuck a tenner on him, and you know, I was there, and he went on and he won the competition. It was in America somewhere. He went on and he won the competition. I was there going deadly, and I went in to check me winnings, and there's nothing in it. I had actually backed him for the Open the following week in England when they the British Open at 33. So I was there, great. But then he went and won it anyway, so I was happy as well.
Brilliant. Fantastic. There was a great little message from his mother to, I think it was his sister, or his wife, Mickelson's wife, you know, and she sent her a message, and it was on the social media. I don't know what you saw.
I saw that, Jeff.
Tell him to stop hitting the bombs. Stop hitting the bombs. Yeah. Only the par his way home is good enough. He won't listen to me, but he'll listen to you.
Don't go for the bombs.
He won't listen to me, but he'll listen to you. I thought it was fantastic.
The wife texts back. He's not listening to me either. He's only listening to himself at the moment.
I know what you're saying about the
reaction at the end, all right. It was kind of...
Yeah.
You did think he'd go mad. You thought he'd break down crying or something. But watching him play around the course, and I heard some other commentators talking about this afterwards, it definitely seemed like he was into the mindfulness or the, you know, the thought.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the meditation.
And the breathing thing that he was
doing.
The
breathing and everything. I definitely think so. I think whatever he's been working on, and it was quite, he's been working obviously on that mental side and meditation and visualization and stuff like that. But also what he said, you know, in his preparation, what he has been doing over the last, because he's lost an awful lot of weight. He slimmed right down, and he fasts, he says, for like 36 hours every week. He doesn't eat anything.
Yeah,
and sort of, I don't know, it's just like, but he's lost amazing weight, but he's on this sort of diet now, and he fasts for 36 hours without eating, like, you know, but he's lost a tremendous amount of weight, but he still hasn't affected, obviously, his strength and his power and, you know, his driving. I mean, one of the drives, he had the longest drive for the whole week at the PGA, you know, he was driving the Shambo, Brooks Koepka, Rory, you know, for a 50-year-old, absolutely incredible, you know.
Yeah, no, it is.
There's this hope for us.
Yeah, absolutely. But I tell you what, especially on that course, because it was incredibly difficult to go anywhere.
It was on that course,
and you're in serious trouble. So it was brilliant. It was brilliant to watch. It really was. So brilliant for you during the week, of course, was the old United game, and I was watching. They were poor.
They were very poor. Yeah, very, very poor. And I think the other guy, Unai Emery, I thought he got his tactics completely right. You know, he's a great tactician. And I thought he worked it out really well. But I thought they were poor. You know, they've been poor. And I said to you last week, I've been disappointed with them since that game against Leicester when he put out a half-strung team. They lost. Then they lost to Liverpool. And then they drew at home to Fulham. So the momentum going into that final was pretty poor. Where up to that Leicester game, he should have put out a good full side, and kept the momentum. You know what momentum is like in sport, Reg? It's very,
huge,
it's very, very important. Okay, I know you're sort of, you had like three games in like 5 or 6 days, but at the same time, you know, you get your goals, then you put some of the younger lads on, fresher legs. Mm. But even the final, you know, he didn't really, he didn't bring players on until into that extra time. You know, he could have freshened her up a little bit earlier, I thought. Yeah. You know, and the penalties, though, were just incredible, I thought. I mean, it was very exciting at the end. But
I've never seen better penalties in my entire life.
Yeah.
Like, up to De Gea, and I did feel sorry for him. But even the goalkeeper, what was his name? Fusel or something. His penalty was amazing. But, like, every single one of the penalties, you know, a couple of times the keepers got their fingertips to it and their hands to it, but they were almost unstoppable. Yeah. They were amazing.
Yeah, yeah, they were very, 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 very good penalties. I mean, but the highest record of penalties, I mean, he didn't save one of the 11, but the previous 10 as well, as a Man United goalkeeper, he hadn't saved. So it's over 21 penalties now he hasn't saved. You know, for a keeper his standard, you'd expect a little bit more, like, you know.
I know.
But no, it is. It's very disappointing, and I do feel sorry for him. I wouldn't blame him. You know, missing the penalties, a lot of pressure on as well. And,
he should have just blasted it down the middle, though, Ken.
Down the middle, down the big. What he should have done, what I do, a big toe poke down the middle,
right down the middle, hard and low with the wet ground. Lash it down the middle, and if your hand doesn't move, fair play. But I wouldn't this like, and you could see it, and like actually, you could see his face going up to it.
The pressure is unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Incredible. Like, you know, apparently, I was talking with a few lads, and there were notes about one of the players who consistently blasted down the middle, you know, and he dived to his left or right. He didn't actually stay. What he should have done was stay down the middle. And what did the guy do? He blasted it down the middle. And he didn't take heed of the notes that he was given. Anyway, very disappointing for Ollie, but I think he'll stay there. I think he'll still be rewarded with a contract. But I think it's quite evident that they need about three or four players, you know.
Where crucially would you see them needing?
I think they definitely need somebody in the centre of defence with Harry Maguire.
Yeah.
I think they need another strong midfielder, you know, like a holding midfielder. So, like, Matic is gone, he's too slow. They need someone alongside Fernandes and Pogba, and then they could deal with, like, that's all right. They definitely need a centre forward. Like, a Harry Kane would be a great addition. And that Sancho, I think, as well. Or a Grealish. I like that Grealish. I don't know about you, for Aston Villa, but he's a classic player.
Very good, yeah.
And I think he would bring a lot of excitement and, you know, to Manchester United. I think it would be perfect for him. You know, he could be moving this summer. But Harry Kane,
what do you think about the chances of that?
I think there's a really good chance, you know. I think there's a really good chance that he could go to Manchester United. It's got to be Manchester United or Man City. But I don't think he'll go to Europe. I don't think he'll go, like, Spain or Italy or anything like that. I think he'll definitely stay in England.
Yeah, to be fair, there isn't really any club in Europe big enough or able for him now at this stage. I mean, okay, you might go, like, say, look at Juve or someone like that in Italy, but certainly Real Madrid and Barcelona are struggling, so you're hardly thinking that they're going to be in a position to offer him what he needs.
They're struggling financially, aren't they? I don't think he's the type that wants to go away. Maybe he was single or whatever, but he's got a young family and stuff. I think he'd want to stay in England and play in the Premiership. Well, the Premiership is the best league in the world now, you know, so I think he'd want to stay in the Premiership. And I think, you know, Man City could do with a centre-forward. So they will be doing as much as they can to try and get him. But I think he has to go to Man City and Manchester United, you know. Liverpool won't meet them because they've got their own, you know, with their front three. They're pretty good in that department. Certainly one of the big two. But I'd certainly like to see him at Manchester United. They could do a really prolific score. You know, someone who's got to sort of guarantee you over 20 goals. They don't have that at the moment. They don't. I thought Rashford was very poor. He has been poor.
Yeah.
Very, very poor. Very overrated at the moment. I think he's had a really bad season, I think. You know, he's had a lot of issues.
I rate him as an amazing player. I really do think he's a brilliant player. He's just had a bad season. It just hasn't clicked. But then equally, he's the type of player who needs people giving him good service around him, and I don't think he's really getting that either. So,
you
know, it's hard to have a good season when you're not getting decent ball coming into you from different places. So he definitely, like you said, needs a stronger midfield. And, you know, there have been some good performances, like, you know, Fernandes and people like that. There's been some decent performances, but in mostly individual stuff. But team-wise, it's not really clicking. What about this evening? Tonight, of course.
The Champions League. Yeah.
English affair.
I'm looking forward to it, to be honest. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a close game. Very tight game, I think. I think Man City are going to win. I can't see Man City, City losing. I'd like to see Chelsea win, to be honest. I think your man has done really well since he got there.
But I just can't see
Man City losing. I think they've got so much class around the pitch, and they've had a fantastic season. They're playing beautiful football. You know, De Bruyne for me, and Diaz at the back has been sensational. That Ben Foden, what a player he is. He's going to be a real star. Could be a real star at the Euros for England. But he is a wonderful player. Sterling, of course, is always there. And I think they've got just an amazing team. And I can't see City losing, but I'd love to see Chelsea win, to be honest. You know, I don't know about you.
I would as well. I said it to Alan a few weeks ago. I thought Chelsea were going to beat them, and they did. And in the league, and I just feel that I don't know. I think Chelsea just seem to play in these games with a lot less pressure on them than City, and they have a really good young squad of players, and they really play exciting football. And I know, City kind of are obviously an amazing team, no question about it, but I thought they kind of rely a bit on De Bruyne too much, and if he doesn't perform, they're not quite the same team. I just don't know. I just have a feeling in me that Chelsea will get it done tonight, and I just think your man Tuchel seems to be able to
he's a great tactician, isn't he? I think he's a great tactician as well, but I think they're going to have to play out their skin. I think to beat the football that Man City have been producing, you know, because they keep the ball for so long. They pass the ball, and then you know, as I said, De Bruyne just pulling the strings all the time. The guys that are running in, and you know, Sterling, Foden, classic players, you know. And even from the bench, they're very, very strong, and that could be a big key point as well, you know. So they've got a great side. They've had a great season, as I said. And they're going for the treble. So Guardiola is just a genius, isn't he? He really is. He's been a wonderful addition to the Premiership, the style of football. And it's going to be a fascinating final. It's going to be Gary Lineker as well. He's moving from BT Sport. I don't know where you saw that during the week.
It's
his last Champions League game after 6 years at the helm at BT. So he's going to step down. He said he wants to follow Leicester on their path around Europe next year. So I don't know what he's going to do for the other 9 months, you know, a year.
I'm sure he doesn't need to worry. He's probably in a nice, comfortable position that he can play golf for the other 9 months. But they've had a good run of it. And he is mad. There's no doubt that it is his beloved Leicester. No question about it whatsoever.
The great Willie Thorne that we sadly lost a couple of years ago. He was a big Leicester fan. And of course, Mark Selby from Leicester, from used to play in Willie Thorne's old club, he went, I think, to the FA Cup final to watch him play. So he's a big Leicester fan as well, you know. So, yeah, it's great. Affinity with Leicester, of course, even in the snooker circuit, you know. But Willie was proclaimed that they were going to win the league at some stage. He was right, eventually. And he got to see them, thankfully, before he passed on. But he was a fantastic character and a great Leicester supporter.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Anything good planned for the rest of the week, or are you busy?
Yeah, I'm going. I've got the golf clubs out. I'm off to play with Stephen Hendry in Sunningdale on Tuesday. And then I'm back up to play with John Parrott in High Lake on Friday, and Formby on Thursday. And Lee Martin is actually the member. I don't know whether you remember Lee Martin. He scored the FA Cup final winning goal against Crystal Palace years ago. Yeah, he's a member of High Lake, and somewhere where I've never played, where Tiger and Rory won the British Open. So I'm really looking forward to that. I've got a bucket of balls I've got to bring with me, because as they say on golf courses, be careful, spraying in progress. And that's got to be me. I've got to be spraying the balls left, right and centre. So, but I've got to enjoy it, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I'm sorry I asked you now. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I wish I never bothered. you have a great time.
I'll be ready.
Enjoy Hoy Lake. I'm not one bit jealous at all. I'll sit here and keep things going.
Okay, yeah. I'm already getting ready for you, Red.
Getting ready for me when you come back. Good luck and keep the head
down.
Have
a great weekend. I will do. Take care. Bye-bye. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
That's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest. And he's hoping, like me, that Chelsea can get the job done tonight, but realising it as well that it's going to be a bit of a tough task for them, but certainly one that I'm looking forward to later on tonight. Now, you might have heard during the week that the record of 93 beaches across Ireland have been awarded a blue flag for their excellent water quality just in time for the summer, and thankfully a summer that's opening up a little bit as well. In a minute, we're going to be talking to a programme coastal officer with Clean Coast, that's Richard Curtin, to tell us about the beaches. So I'm going to join Richard now. Morning, Richard. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. Keeping well yourself?
I'm keeping very well, thanks. And it's been a good week in terms of things seem to be opening up a little bit, and people are getting back out there. And our roving reporter, Jane McNamara, caught up with a couple of those people in Mayo. Let's just have a listen to what they have to say before I come to you.
For me, it's the challenge. It's still a challenge going in every day, the cold water dip, and I love the friendship part of it, the communication between us all.
A lot of physical benefits. I have a bad back, and I find the sea water, the swimming, helps. Whether that's mental, the benefit or not, I'm not sure. It's hard getting in, but you never regret when you're back out afterwards.
I'm addicted to it. I love it. The days I'm in work, I can't wait to get home and just get straight into the ocean. It's very good for my mental health, I find, yeah. Keeps me positive.
How cold is this compared to Spain?
Well, to be honest, it's really, 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 really cold. But I think it was Tuesday that was actually felt warmer, because the temperature of the water was warmer than the one outside. So yeah, it's fine. You know, I just shout a lot when I get in.
She shouts a lot when she gets in. I don't blame her. I do a bit of that myself, Richard. I'm lucky enough to live out in Greystones, right beside the sea. I haven't been brave enough to get in yet this year, but I think this weekend is going to be literally taking the plunge. But it's great news, and it's a really growing area, you know, this cold water swimming, or sea swimming as they're calling it. People are loving it.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And especially over the lockdown as well, like in the Dublin region especially, like loads of people were kind of like restricted to where they went, and a lot of them went out towards the coast, and it just exploded. So you'd go down to kind of 40 foot and it'd be like there'd be loads kind of going down and embracing the sea. And they were obviously getting the mental health benefits as well. So we are delighted to see more and more people using it and kind of embracing the coast, and we really want to just once they embrace it in a responsible manner as well, obviously, and kind of make sure they don't leave any litter and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have seen evidence of that, all right, but I think for the most part people are fairly cognizant of the need to bring their rubbish home with them. Like 93 beaches across Ireland have been given the blue flag. Now, I had heard of a few beaches losing their blue flag status, so it's good news that we're kind of gone back up again and those beaches have recovered them. What's the reason for that? What has led to this kind of reduction in pollution or whatever that's given us the blue flag status?
Well, it's just for a number of different reasons why, you know, the water quality can improve. So sometimes it's due to kind of like infrastructure, if there's kind of like new wastewater treatment has went in, or kind of an upgrade of infrastructure. Like in Dublin, we've seen now Killiney actually regained its flag, and that had lost that back in 2016, so that was delighted to see. So and it's not just water quality as well. Like some flags with the blue flag, it can be a number of different factors. So it's also kind of like got to do with the beach infrastructure, like disabled toilets, disabled access, you know, kind of around safety as well for lifeguards and that, and kind of like first aid. So, you know, we always kind of hear about the water quality, but for the blue flag criteria, there's a number of different factors why a beach kind of achieved the status in that.
Okay, very good. Of course, a lot of people you see, you know, you mentioned the cold there. There's no doubt about it. You have to be pretty brave at first to get in. But of course, you can get wetsuits and everything now that make it a lot easier. Do you go yourself a lot, or are you brave at 6 o'clock in the morning like the happy pair lads out my way?
Yeah, no, I'd be an all-year-round swimmer in that, and it's absolutely, like, it's fantastic. Like, you've seen the kind of vox pop you had there. Like, people are talking about the mental health benefits, and the research is actually showing it's like it does release endorphins. Like, once you get over that initial shock to the system or the fight or flight moment, like, it actually benefits throughout the day. And it's so interesting, like, you know, outside the kind of the research aspect, I remember I was swimming about 4 years ago when I first got into it, and I was out at the 40 foot, and it was myself and this lady in her 70s, and she turned around to me and said, "Sure, how could you be angry after it?" And that's exactly it. Like, once you get in, like, it's just, it's like a reset button and that. So it's fantastic. So if any people on the radio, if they haven't started doing it yet, I would highly recommend it.
Well, I would too. I've done, like, all last year. I remember myself and the kids were down, and like I said, we'll be down again today. I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that this morning, because they've been at me for a while. Lad, come on, and haven't been brave enough. But today will be the day. The weather's picked up a bit. But it's so true. You get in, of course, it's a shock. But when you get out, it's a weird feeling. It's almost like, as you said, you're hitting the reset button. But it's a weird feeling how good you feel after it. It's just hard to explain. You really have to try and go and just give it a go. Are you one of these dry rovers?
No. I'm an old school kind of old school towel guy. So that's the way. Where you have the anxiety that your towel will fall down and stuff like that. But no, I'm I'm old school at that.
You're like me, so
yeah.
A towel in a plastic bag.
Exactly. Yeah. Retro for good. The Matt Damon look.
Well, look, there's plenty of beaches: Dublin, Portmarnock, Sea Point, Killiney, having getting their blue flag status back, and of course out in Wicklow, Bray, Greystones, and the South Beach. So plenty of places to try it out, and of course all around the country as well. Richard, it's been great chatting. I might bump into you sometime out swimming, and have a great day and enjoy the sunshine that we're supposed to be getting over the course of the weekend.
Perfect. Okay, cheers, Reggie.
Thanks a lot. That's Richard Curtin there. Just talking about the 93 beaches across Ireland that have been awarded the blue flag status. And like I said, takes a little bit of bravery at first, but you'll never feel better for it if you don't give it a go. So get in there, give it a bash this weekend when the weather's a bit warmer. Okay, we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Deirdre Smith about Phil Mickelson's wonderful win last week, and of course Stephanie Meadows' performance, and Leona Maguire as well, of course, who's still playing in the PGA. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Now, time to turn our attention to golf. Delighted to be joined by Deirdre Smith, as always. Morning, Deirdre. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. You heard Richard Curtis say you're going to be, or Curtin, are you going to be jumping in for a swim today?
I hope to get in today too, Reggie. I'm one of those people who sort of got back to it in the lockdown. I did it a few years ago, and when the lockdown came and there was no golf, I went back to it. So I've tried to keep it up over the winter. I'm not one of these fair weather swimmers. I'm a winter swimmer as well as a summer swimmer. So so looking forward to it today. Look, the benefits are marvelous as were touched on earlier.
Excellent. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it myself. Now, look, it was an incredible performance last week from Phil Mickelson. Before the final couple of rounds, we were chatting about his chances and the pressure that he'd be under from the rest of the field. But he managed to block all that out using, it seemed, some very strong mindfulness techniques or whatever you call it. And an amazing win at 50 years of age, it has to be said.
Yeah, 51, you know, not just 51, you know, there were only three people have ever won a major over 45. And, you know, when we spoke a few weeks ago about Tiger Woods and whether he would ever come back again, you know, you'd have to think now that, you know, he's back in the frame now again if he gets his body back into a physical shape. So, look, it's marvellous for the older golfers. And, you know, a few weeks before the tournament, Mickelson actually said to his wife, he'd had an epiphany of some sort, and now we don't know what that was. And it was really interesting to see that at 51, that he was still learning, and that's the thing about this game. You just can't buy experience, and you have to serve your time at it. And obviously, he just had some, you know, some change and some vision within himself that you know, that allowed him to be in a really mentally great, great place. And, you know, they talk about that 6 inches between their ears is 90%. And who would have thought that Phil Mickelson needed help in that area, having won five majors? But, you know, there's just proof that you just can keep improving. And that was great for the game because, you know, in some ways golf has become kind of, I won't say boring, but, you know, we had these people who were bombing it so long and who had kind of lost, you know, hadn't the creativity of the older players like the Seves and Mickelson and you know, even Faldo in his own way and even Harrington and Clark. And it was just great from that perspective that you can't just come along and bomb the ball 400 yards and win every tournament. And you know, for me, that's fantastic for golf. And Phil is such a character as well, you know.
Exactly. But isn't that a strong testament as well to the course? Because that was such a difficult course. And as you said, it didn't lend itself to the likes of a Deschambeau just bombing the ball everywhere because it's just too much trouble.
Yeah, you know, Harrington talked earlier after the tournament. He said, look, it's better to have a reasonably easy course set up difficult rather than a hard course set up, you know, too difficult. And that's why he did well too, because it just demanded certain types of shots that you had to be creative and you had to be patient and you had to have just total belief that if you missed a green, that you could get up and down. And, you know, and Harrington said that his short game wasn't as good as it should have been. Yeah. You know, so who knows what he could have done if that had been sharp.
Funnily enough, Deirdre, it was my mother who commented to me and said, you know, all this talk about Phil. Now, she wouldn't be a huge Phil fan, but she was saying all this talk about Phil at 51. And look at Porrick, he's only a couple of years behind him and having an outstanding performance as well. It was brilliant from him.
Yeah, look, you asked me last week to pick a tip, you know, I didn't pick Harrington or I didn't pick Lowry, but you picked them, so it looks like you're better at picking tips than me. You know, but look, they just enjoyed themselves. They were paired together. It was a Sunday stroll for them. They were totally relaxed. You know, they were just enjoying each other's company. They were high-fiving. They were hugging each other. It was just a walk in the park for them. And if you can get into that frame of mind, in a major tournament and just treat it like a Sunday stroll, who knows what can happen? And that's what Phil did, even though he was doing the whole mental, like you could see him, his eyes closed and he was really into it. But he just seemed, you know, he looked like the winner, to be honest to me. You know, he really had that look about him from the get-go. I mean, obviously he bogeyed the first with a three-putt and you thought, oh, he's a bit tight. He left the putt short, which is a sign of being a bit under pressure. But he bounced back immediately and it was Koepka who went to pieces, and there's been a lot of commentary on Koepka not coming up trumps on the Sundays, and so many Sundays that he's missed out on majors.
Well,
so
when he started going with the knee and all of this type of stuff, you just knew mentally he was gone at that stage. I actually thought the only one that might have caught him was Louis at that stage. You know, he was the only one that looked like he had the mental wherewithal to get there. But it was an interesting relationship, as you mentioned there, between Porrig and Shane Lowry. Obviously, everybody straight away jumped towards the Ryder Cup, and does that mean now that Lowry's going to be that pick because he's got that friendship? And it kind of put Porrig in an awkward position in some ways.
Yeah, well, look, you know, Lowry has since said that, look, I want to get on there on merit, and that's what he wants to do. And he'll hopefully in the next few weeks, with so many points on offer in the tournaments, the double points in the tournaments, he'll hopefully make the team himself without having to rely on, you know, we had that a few years ago with that guy in England, Porter, you know, and he was picked as a wild card and people kind of felt that, you know, maybe he didn't deserve to be picked, but, you know, he went on and he came up trumps. So, you know, whatever happens, whether Lowry is picked, he won't be feeling any pressure. And I'm sure that Harrington will be his own man and he'll make the decision on merit.
I happen to think personally that Lowry would be a brilliant addition to the Ryder Cup team because it's a team event, and he fits in well, and he also adds a good dimension to the team, as in, you know, a team is about characters that will blend well with the other members of it, and he would do that brilliantly. So that's why I think he'd be a great dimension, but of course I'm extremely biased.
I totally agree with you on that, Reggie. Look, you've played team sports, you know, with Leinster and Ireland, and you know what it takes. It takes all sorts. It takes the professional, it takes the quiet person, it takes the... But you need those characters too to gel, bring the whole thing together and bring a bit of camaraderie and team spirit. And definitely, I agree with you on that.
Leona Maguire, she was on track to book her spot in the next round of the LPGA match play. And then did she lose 5 holes on the trot to Jennifer Kupcho?
Not exactly 5 holes on the trot, but she was 5 up through 7. Oh, yeah. She was 4 up through 12. And look, Kupcho is a class act. You know, she's 17th in the world. You know, Leona has punched way above her weight. She beat Ali Ewing, who's 30th in the world as well. And, you know, there's talk that Ali Ewing will make the USA Sondheim Cup. And, you know, that even Leona might get a wild card. So, and then Kim beat her. And Kim is 116th in the world, but Kim is a hardened, you know, she's a hardened match player. You know, Kim played on the Sondheim Cup in 2011 in Killeen Castle. Right. And Leona was on the Junior Sondheim Cup that year.
Okay.
You know, which is amazing. And, you know, she's such a character. So, look, it's a pity she didn't win that match against Kupcho. You know, she was a peer of Maguire's in college golf. Right. And they got on well. You know, they were quite good pals in college golf, even though they played for two different colleges. She won the Augusta National, the inaugural Augusta National Tournament, Kupcho. So she's a class act. And, you know, Leona has punched way above her weight, and we have never had anybody in that LPGA match play.
That's
so,
yeah.
You know, we have to keep this in perspective. I know it's disappointing, but we've never had anybody close to that. We've never had anybody close to the Sondheim Cup, and there's talk now that she might get a wild card. I mean, it's her second year as a pro.
Brilliant.
So look, we have to look at all the positives, Reggie, in my book.
Absolutely. It's an amazing performance from Leona. And long may it last. Okay, Deirdre, I'm going to have to leave it there. We'll catch up with you again very shortly. Looking forward to another chat.
Okay, and well done in your 44 points during the week, by the way.
Yes, I'll be living on that for a while. Good luck. Thanks, Deirdre.
Take care, Reggie. Bye-bye.
That's Deirdre Smith there, giving us all of the latest on the golf. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be covering the racing with Andrew Blair-White. Don't go away. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. Now, horse racing, time to have a look at that. Delighted to be joined by Andrew Blair-White. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Yeah, very good, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very good. Well done last week. So we had Max Swinney in the 2000 Guineas and you had Hooper in Stratford as well. Two good winners for us. So all in all, it was good in the Curra as well, the racing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Look, it was good personally that Max Swinney won, but also good, I think, for the sport of horse racing. Jim Bulger having the 1-2 with himself and Poetic Flair. Pulling well clear of the field as well in testing enough conditions. And I think the way just Jim Bulger sometimes campaigns these horses, Reggie, we see them out, you know, very regularly. We see them out every couple of weeks. And McSwinney now has got a very live chance going to Epsom next weekend for the Derby. So that'll be very interesting to see whether he can take that step up in trip well. But brilliant for Jim Bulger and brilliant for Rory Cleary as well, a jockey that's done an awful lot of grafting, works very hard at his riding and has worked for Jim Bulger for many years now. And for him to get his first Group 1 winner in an Irish 2000 Guineas was a fantastic story.
Absolutely. And of course, Aidan O'Brien had Empress Josephine in the 1000 Guineas and a good win there too.
Yeah, well, normal service resumed on the Sunday with Aidan O'Brien. He had a 1-2 himself in the 1000 Guineas with Empress Josephine beating Joan of Arc. Empress Josephine was actually the was I think 14-1 in comparison to Joan of Arc, who was I think 4-1, but got up on the line for Shamey Heffernan. A very good ride from Heffernan, gave her plenty of time to warm up into the race and got going quite late. She's a late developing filly. She's one that we probably still haven't seen the best of, and we'll be interesting to see whether she can back that up. I think she's going to head off to Royal Ascot now in a couple of weeks as well. So it's very exciting that we're going to be able to kind of track the progression of some of these young 3-year-olds as they go through, whether it's onto the Derby or the Oaks very soon, or whether it's onto engagements at Royal Ascot as well.
And it was a weekend for the underdogs as well. I see Fozzie Stack, Joseph Murphy and Willie McCreary all bagging winners as well.
Yeah, it was great to see, actually, that it was well split out in the group races. Fozzie Stack with Castle Star, Joe Murphy with Gustavus Weston, and William McCary with Opponent Plays, all winning group races on the Saturday. And then Noel Mead himself winning the big Group 1 on the Sunday with Helvic Dream. It was a fantastic ride from Colin Keane to get Helvic Dream up on the line to beat Broome, who was an odds-on favourite for Aidan O'Brien. An awful lot of us would know Noel Mead, but certainly much more so for his exploits over jump racing, where he's won plenty of Grade 1s. This was his first Group 1 on the flat. A little bit like Jesse Harrington, he's bridged into flat racing of recent years, just to have a couple there. And this Helvic Dream is a very good progressive horse as a four-year-old, and Colin King gave him a great ride. So, yeah, I think sometimes it's good. Obviously, we've had such great training performances from Aidan O'Brien, Joseph O'Brien, and I'm sure Dunico O'Brien to come as well. But sometimes nice to see the spoils being shared around the table as well.
Very good. Okay, what are we looking at for this week? What's the main races and what picks do you have for us?
Yeah, well, I suppose the main races are over in Haydock on the flat. A couple of handy races there. We're starting off with the Pinnacle Stakes over a mile and a half. A little trappy forerunner affair, but I quite like Oriental Mystique in that for David Simcock. And Usheen Murphy was third on her reappearance behind Alpinista. Goodwood only beaten a length. I thought that was decent enough form. She was placed also in a Group 2 over in Longchamp last year, over a mile and a half as well. I think she could go quite well. She's in and around that 2-1, 9-4 price. She's second favourite. I think she's got a chance. The John O'Gaunt Stakes over 7 furlongs. It's been a bit of a drift on a horse called I Like Her Safe Voyage, who's 8-5-1. I think he's not a bad price at 5-1. He does have to carry a penalty of £5 in this race because he's won a Group 2 last year. But he's a very admirable horse, an 8-year-old for John Quinn and Jason Hart. He actually won over in Leopardstown last year in the Boomerang Stakes. So he's certainly one to keep in mind. And certainly for jump lovers like myself, there's a couple of good handicaps at Punchestown to get stuck into as well. Especially the 150 and the 410, the 150 being the handicap chase. I quite like Andalusia in that for Willie Mullins, who's off at lightweight, wins at this time of the year, 6-year-old that still has a bit of something about. And in the handicap hurdle, I'm giving you a real rag in this one, Reggie, in the 410, a horse called Long Claw for John McConnell and Brian Hayes. You can get 40-1 about him. He won this time last year. He was beating Jeff Kidder by 6 lengths, and Jeff Kidder's gone on to win a Grade 1 at the back end of this year. Now, his form has tapered off a little bit, but if he's returned to last summer's form, he'd have to have a chance off the mark he's competing off. And at 40-1, you can take those sort of chances.
Excellent stuff. Okay, we'll have a little look at that, all right. All right, what's the lucky 15 from this week then? Where are we going to go with that?
Yeah, it's kind of around the block at the moment. Starting off in the 210 at Cartmel. Cartmel, is, for people that don't know, is track over in England. Very much tables for specialist horses. It's a bit of an oddly formed track. So the 210, a horse called D-Star for Gary Hanmer. He's around 8-1. I think he's got a good chance. He's got very good course and distance form. He's won over this course and distance and placed off higher marks before. Off a low mark today, I think he could run well. The 240 at Chester, rapidly progressive horse for Tim Easterby called Boardman, who I see there's been a bit of money for this morning. He was as big as 9-2 last night. He's in to, I think, around 5-2 this morning. He's won his last two. He's been hiked up to weights, but I think he's still got another win in him. So 3:35 punches down, average enough maiden hurdle, but would probably be my best bet of the day. A Joseph O'Brien horse called Banbridge, who's at 2-1. He won a bumper the last time, having disappointed in his first bumper, but he's a point-to-point graduate. I think he's got a lovely chance if he takes the hurdles. And finally, the 3:55 at Cartmel, another bigger price for you, a Tristan Davidson's horse, Just a Tenner, who you can get in and around the 10-11-1 mark. So he's, again, another horse with very good course and distance form. He's won 4 times at the course before and returns here in a competitive race, but I think he's got a good chance. And certainly one for those people that want to have an each-way play. Himself and D-Star would be pretty good candidates for that at Cartmel.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Andrew, appreciate that. That's great rundown of everything, and hopefully we'll have another couple of winners like you did last week, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Cheers, Reddy.
And you're welcome back to the second part of Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. And you can contact us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp on 087 188 1068. And we'd love to hear from you. Now, time to turn our attention to rugby. Delighted to be joined on the line now by Irish Independent reporter David Kelly, a journalist, I should say. I give you your proper title. Good morning, David. How are you?
I've been called worse. Good morning, Reggie.
All good. It's looking lovely out there. Beautiful day. It's brightening up nicely. Puts the spirits up. Last night, that game down in Thomond Park, the last for CJ and a couple of the boys. A lot of hype around that. They kind of made hard work of it in the end.
Yeah, I must admit, I kind of sped through the main action. I was actually lucky to be at a game last night. I went the same path, but we won't mention the war. So, you know, they got the result. The performance was mixed. Their main avenue was the maul and the usual kick, chase, force, error, which seemed to work well. And when they went away from that, it didn't work well. And Cardiff, as a lot of teams have been able to do, possibly against Munster, you know, with their 3-3 attack, were able to kind of pretty much tear them open at times, it seemed. I don't know what you think, out in those wider channels, and cut through them seemingly at will for a team who didn't really have... Well, they didn't have much to play for. They were a point behind going into it, but Dai Young was kind of sending a few mixed signals. But they did have a chance to go for it last night, and they obviously went for it. But, I mean, ultimately, the 5 points is what Munster wanted to kind of to keep in the running. I mean, it would be ironic completely if the one time they managed to beat Leinster in a competition, they failed to qualify for the final. But that keeps them... in contention now. You presume a 5-pointer away to Zebre, and you know, Benetton have to travel twice. They've Connacht and Ospreys, so you know, you wonder, will their little fairy tale run, which nobody seems to be paying attention to, I'd be betting on Munster to kind of finish the job, but you know, they're looking for their old Connacht mates having almost tripped him up a couple of weeks ago. It's pretty kind of to do them a favour today.
Yeah, well, I certainly have been keeping tabs on this. Benetton have Connacht today at home at 5:15 in Benetton. I fancy Benetton in that one. I think they're a tough outfit to beat.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
And I think they're a tough outfit to beat, and I kind of fancy them that. I think it'll all come down to that last weekend. Now, I know Connacht are a great team and that too, but I just have a feeling that this could be Bennett. And I absolutely think it would be incredible for the competition that, you know, they did this thing about, the best of the Northern against the best of the Southern Hemisphere take each other on in this big dramatic thing to boost the Rainbow Cup. And it could well be neither Leinster or Munster, who everybody thought it would be, are the team. And I just think that would be very ironic.
Yeah, I mean, a bit like we were celebrating the 5-year anniversary of Connacht's remarkable win under Pat Lam. I mean, yeah, Everyone outside Munster, I think, in rugby, would like for Treviso to get there. We all know the difficulties Italian rugby have had in terms of you know, Six Nations and their very glacial development of their structures to try and remain competitive in the Six Nations and talk about relegation, etc., etc. So it would be a huge boost for Italian rugby and the game, the so-called global game, which everyone bangs on about, which doesn't at times seem very global. But obviously, Munster, as much as rugby needs Treviso to be successful, everyone within Munster are desperate for them to get some silverware after over a decade.
Listen, David, I want to ask you, where do you see the standing of Irish rugby after this season? Now, we've had a COVID year. It's been a very weird time. I get all of that. But, you know, ultimately, all of our provinces were a bit Well, they're a bit limp, is the word I'll use, in Europe. And I know Leinster got to the point that they got, but even at that, they went out with a little bit of a whimper. And I don't feel the others were really realistic challengers. Now we see the likes of CJ Stannard and Tommy O'Donnell, a few lads leaving Munster. Where do you think we stand in terms of the European competition? Have we slipped back?
I would very boldly, and you know, you could chat for 24 hours about this, but in less than that time, I think, you know, I'm always amused at the kind of scaremongering about Leinster when they've lost to a Saracens, or as they did against the La Rochelle, that, you know, this is a fatal blow to their hopes, and yet we ignore the time when they do beat the Saracens or they do beat the Toulouse. So I think Leinster are in that, if I can pluck an awful COVID term, they're in that cohort of leading European sides, same way you have leading sides in the Champions League in soccer, and they will remain there. They will next year find a way to beat the better teams. La Rochelle didn't beat them, in my opinion, they didn't beat them because they were a bigger team and a better resourced team and a better funded team. I would argue probably Leinster are even probably more elaborately funded than La Rochelle if you dug deep into it, in terms of their funding from IRFU and their own private sources. They just didn't beat La Rochelle because they weren't cleverer on the day. They didn't have any wit. They didn't have any invention. They didn't have any leadership. They weren't beaten by Nick Skelton. I wouldn't see any major difficulties there. I mean, they do need all their best players playing on the day and showing leadership and maybe not lacking form, which probably happened to a couple of key players and fitness in terms of James Ryan, perhaps, and Gary Ringrose, who struggled at times for form and fitness. In terms of the others, I mean, Ulster continue to flatter, to deceive. Got themselves into some winning positions and really, really in a slip-shod fashion threw those winning positions away in both domestic and European fair. And I think they remain probably further away than ever. I know you watch them a lot, but I mean, I'm just not convinced by them. Connacht, we always patronise them by saying they're at a certain level, but you know, I'd be worried that they're kind of slightly dipping below that level. They had a series of, again, kind of defeats from the jaws of victories there around Christmas, which they seem to kind of get a handle on, but it kind of returned to bite them in the bum. I see they're getting a Tongan back rower in to replace Quinn Roo, but you know, I don't see any obvious improvements there. I mean, it's a nice coaching setup. They've had to change that again. Will that take time to bed in? They just don't convince me in terms of the long haul. And, you know, Munster, we're assuming they're going to get to this final. Do you see them beating the South Africans in the final? It's hard to say. They might bore each other to death, but I just think a South African team would be too much for them, as the bigger teams in Europe have. It'll be that kind of game, you know what I mean? It'll be a superior team, and I can see them falling short there. And again, in Europe, it just doesn't seem they have learned the lessons. And it's worrying the players who left. I mean, Standard's the obvious one, but you know, even guys like Tommy O'Donnell, James Cronin, very surprising. You'd worry about Loosehead there, your old position. And a lot of players, I think JJ, another one, a lot of players who kind of left, I would kind of think would have probably stayed, but for maybe £1 or £2 either way. And they're obviously, you know, struggling in terms of paying top dollar in terms of their squad. Yeah, there's no great improvement there. So, I mean, I don't think they've really advanced that far. Obviously, Calgary will be fully fit next year and Craig Casey is coming on. But in terms of the development of the game under Larkham, it has come on and Bang Van seems to have embraced that. But, yeah, again, they don't convince. So, Maybe are they treading water? Does that mean they're going backwards? I'm not. I think Leinster will be top four again in Champions Cup next season. That's their level, and it's on the day whether they're good enough to win. And I struggled to begin convinced by the other three.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the Ireland, you know, the Ireland aspect. I mean, you know, we're all guilty. Your game as a pundit now, and in my game, there's a tendency. I've tried to limit it in recent years. Maybe it's old age and experience, kids. But this, you know, we kind of jump to immediate conclusions based upon the last evidence of something, which I know in a team environment you'd never do with Leinster and Ireland in the old days. Mm. You take a broader picture. And the broader picture, really, of Andy Farrell's Ireland is not necessarily what happened against England. It's over a longer piece. And again, there's too many inconsistencies in terms of the style of the game plan, inconsistencies within the game, a couple of inconsistencies in selection. So again, you know, a couple of years out from a World Cup, you need another kind of consistent 6 to 9 months, whether through November. I mean, Japan, okay, the incoming tour in July will be just to look at kind of emerging players and that. But in terms of, like, say, November and Six Nations, you're going to need a really, really solid body of work, kind of, again, be convinced that, okay, Ireland, you know, have something to build on going into the World Cup, because I don't think there's enough there over the last year and a half in terms of that consistency. Yeah. You can say,
yeah,
we know what Ireland are, you know?
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, well, it's an interesting prospect, something we're going to have to watch carefully, and no doubt, this Rainbow Cup thing has more significance to Munster than we might realise, and the importance of it. So I think a result in that is pretty much crucial to them at this stage. But we'll have to watch it unfold, and we'll see how Benetton get on against Connacht today. Dave, I'm out of time. I'd love to talk longer to you about that, but that's all we've got time for this morning. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me this morning.
No worries, Reggie. Take care.
That's David Kelly there of the Irish Independent giving us his thoughts on the Rainbow Cup and where the Irish provinces stand at present. Okay, we're going to take a quick break now. We'll be right back. And you're welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Now it's time for our new segment in the show where we send our roving reporter Jane McNamara out to catch up with some of Ireland's best sports stars. And Jane, this week you were chatting to an Olympic swimmer.
How are you? I was chatting to Dara Green. Dara is a swimmer from Longford. He is a multiple Irish record holder in the breaststroke, and he is heading off to the Olympics to represent Ireland. He's also part of Ireland's men's 4x100 metres medley relay team. They're waiting on news about whether they will go through to the Olympics, and they should find out about that on Monday. So I started by asking Dara about his very intense training.
Be up at 6 o'clock in the morning to be on deck at 7 and in the water at 7:30. We're in the water for 2 hours and then I'm out of the water, and whether we're in gym at 10 o'clock then for an hour and a half, and then I'm back to eat, refuel, rest and get ready for the evening at 2:30 to 5:00.
Mm-hmm. And you were in South Korea in 2019 in the World Championships. How was that experience?
Yeah, it was an unreal experience. It was the biggest kind of competition I've been to. And it was an exciting competition as well, because it was my first ever World Long Course Championships, but at the same time, held something with it. So it was the first time we could actually qualify for the Olympic Games. So I had the 100 breaststroke up first. It was very bittersweet in the morning after it, because in the moment of it, I placed 17th. So I just missed the semi-final. It was the first time ever a sub-60 swimmer missed finals or semi-finals. So it just showed the field. But at the same time, the main objective of that competition was to pre-validate myself or qualify for the Olympic Games, which I did straight off the bat, which was a huge relief, especially being a year out. And obviously what was to follow after that was kind of the COVID situation and stuff and everything being up in the air. But at least I knew I had my qualifications secured.
Okay. And so the European Championships final in Budapest last week, that goal there was to qualify an Olympic relay team. And that hasn't happened since 1972, is that right?
Yeah, that was the women's relay, I'm pretty sure. So we're currently, we were placed 16th overall, so it's top 16 teams get through. And the cutoff date for that now is Monday. So the we'll know now come Monday. So we just have to kind of wait and see. Fingers crossed we can get the team there, which would be unbelievable. But depends on if any other team, relay team, kind of, you have that window to produce a time, a top 16 time in the world, and there's four places up for grabs. So the top 12 relay teams from world championships, they automatically qualify for the Olympics, and then there's four spots left, four wildcard spots, and we were placed 14th at the time, and now we're placed 16th from Europeans, so that's how fast the teams were. And so each team, every nation has up to the 31st to produce a time for a relay, and the top four fastest times get a spot.
So how are you feeling now? That's just a few days away.
Yeah, we're kind of very content. It's kind of can't come soon enough, especially with some of the lads that, like, I'm fortunate enough to actually have my own individual times, but I couldn't imagine being... The other lads, pretty much, I say they're really focusing on it a lot more than myself. But you kind of can't really get yourself into it, because it's whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen. It's out of our control now. We just have to wait.
What would it mean then, or you are going to the Olympics? So what is it going to mean to you to represent Ireland?
It's kind of huge. It's one of those things that you'd always dreamed of if it was a possibility, and then your whole life, and then all of a sudden it's one of those things that you kind of, you're looking at yourself as into whatever you put in, you get out of it. And that was my main kind of, my main overall goal was to be an Olympian and be able to represent where I'm from, Newtown Forbes, Longford, and the whole country itself, Ireland. No better feeling, and everything else is a bonus really after that. I'm really, really grateful for the community support that I've gotten, and the likes of us, I was fortunate to partner up with local garage, O'Reilly and Sons Volkswagen. I was able to get a car, and it's one of those stress reliefs from getting to and from the pool. Because my last car wasn't very reliable. And that, just the county itself, to the council and stuff, I was very fortunate that I'm just back the whole way with my home place.
Mm-hmm. Being supported like that, that must make a big difference to a young athlete.
Oh yeah, it's huge, because like, our sport, being an Olympic sport, swimming especially, it isn't a well-paid sport like other sports, like football and whatever. You're kind of, whatever, your sport-wise helps you over the moon with it. It's just one of those less stress kind of things, so you can help you focus on getting the most out of yourself and push yourself to the best of your ability. So, like, any kind of support is absolutely huge, especially for an Olympic athlete or an athlete trying to go to the Olympics, because the time and dedication you need, like, there's no possible way to, especially this day and age, to do half and half, as in, like, to be able to have a job and train at the same time. It's just full-on training.
And that was our own Jane McNamara catching up with Dara Green there, who's heading off to the Olympics in Tokyo for swimming. Let's hope he is anyway. There's been a lot of talk around the Olympics of late. It's going to be very interesting to see which way that all goes, but very interesting listening there. Okay, time to turn our attention to GAA now. I'm joined in studio by Declan Drake, but it was back-to-back Allianz National Hurling League Division 1 wins for Matty Kenny's Blues as they beat Antrim at Parnell Park last Saturday 126-118 in their third game of the 2021 campaign. The boss, Matty Kenny, spoke to Declan after the game at county headquarters. Let's have a listen to that now.
The one is Manny Freeze today, so more scores from play. So I think we had a good spread of scores right across the field, and that's always pleasing to see. And you know, we created a number of goal scoring opportunities also, but we already came away with one.
You see the likes of Darragh Gray coming up and clipping over 3 points from wing back. That's impressive stuff too.
Yeah, he played well. And look at it's you know, when the guys are working hard all around the field, you know, little pop space will pop up for different players, and that was important today for us. We said at the start of the league that it was about building for the championship. You know, we've two very competitive games coming now in 2 weeks' time. We've Clare coming here to Parnell Park, and we're away to Wexford. So look, we'll have a better understanding and a better idea of where we're at by the time we get there. You know, so they're two good games to look forward to.
Yeah, Declan, it was a really good performance. I mean, you know, I remember when we were talking about this at the beginning of the comeback to GAA, and I was asking about the hurling and where do we stand and how are the team looking and everything else. And you said to me that, you know, there have been great performances in the past from the hurlers, but their consistency lacked a little bit. And they were unlucky at the very start, and albeit against very tough opposition. But, you know, to win the next two, that consistency seems to be coming a bit.
Yeah, good morning to you, Reg. It was important that they won those two games back to back. They would have targeted the victories over Laois and Antrim. Now, the thing about it for me is the level of consistency in their scoring. They hit 30 points against Laois and Moore Park, and last week they scored 126, so just a point short of that over the course of 70 minutes. They got a goal too, which was good. They hadn't done that in the previous two games. Ronan Hayes of Kilmacud Crokes, the man raising the green flag there, and I was just doing the prep on it this morning. I think 13 different scores on from the team from all sectors of the park. Mentioned Darragh Gray there, the Whitehall column Killman from wing back clipping over 3 points. Shawnee Moran from Cool on the other side contributed. The forwards did really well too. Danny Sutcliffe had a very strong game, which is great to see him back to something approaching his best. Chris Crummy at centre forward, and of course Donald Burke in the inside line just continues to have a great season, which is wonderful and badly needed as well.
And Matty said that it was all about building for the championship. It seems like that prep is going well in that direction.
Yeah, and of course they're going to be playing Antrim again in the championship at the end of June. So as we said last week, it's about not only getting two crucial league points to move you on to four, but also to get that little psychological edge perhaps ahead of Antrim going into the championship game at the end of next month. Now Antrim will have learned a lot from last week's game themselves, so it's a fair bit of hurling to be played before that. Of course, we've finished the first block of three games: Kilkenny, Laois and Antrim. A break this week, no game, which is a good thing, I think, because it'll allow whatever niggling injuries are in the squad perhaps to heal up a little bit better, and also to work a lot more on the training pitch consistently before the next two games, which start next Saturday evening against Clare at Parnell Park.
That's not going to be easy.
We know the form they're in at the moment. Yeah. You know, they only 2 points from their three games so far. So they're looking over their shoulder at relegation. But if we can pick up the 2 points against them at home next Saturday evening, it will stand us in good stead.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the best of luck to them with that, because it's great to see the hurlers doing well and hopefully going from strength to strength. And the football, it was some game and 70 minutes of football at Semple Stadium, and it ended in a fairly dramatic 4-9-118 points draw in the clash of Dublin and Kerry. Both sides having their spells of dominance in the game, kind of ebbed and flowed a bit, but Kerry earning a dramatic last gasp draw through David Clifford's penalty. You caught up as well with Dublin's interim golf boss Mick Galvin and spoke to him post-match. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
We were very kind of slow out of the blocks. Our execution was quite poor in the first 20. Really upped that in the second quarter, got ourselves into a really strong position. Then just got a little bit sloppy. Kerry, you know, probably hit their purple patch when we hit our really poor patch. But then we got back control again, got into the game, got 3 points up, going into the last injury time, I presume, and got hit by a sucker punch at the end, which we'd be disappointed with, but we'll have to have a look at it. But overall, I'd say, you know, we take a point out of the game and move on. It's hard to track the game, the ebb and flow. It changed nearly every 5-10 minutes. We had possession and control, then it changed to them. So again, it's early season stuff. We're trying a few things out, trying some new players out. So, again, we'll be disappointed with our bad stuff. Our good stuff is quite good at the moment, but a lot to work on.
So, Declan, everyone was kind of talking about how good Kerry were this season, and they were coming into this game, and it was all the hullabaloo around them and everything else. And we were here last week saying, well, you know, there's going to be a bit of pressure on Dublin. And for the most part, the Dubs seemed to be in control of the match. I think there were 5 or 6 points up at one stage, and you score 4 goals against Kerry and you still don't win the match.
Yeah, that's the point I was making to you just off air there, Reg, that to score 4 goals against Kerry, you'd win most games, but not last week's game. Very, very strange one. The first 15 minutes, the quality was poor from both teams. The shot selection and the shot execution from both of them was poor. But Dublin then settled into the game, got a bit of a run on Kerry, scored the 3 goals. Conor Callaghan, who had a goal chance as early as 2 minutes missed, helped himself to a brace, and Cormac Costello continued his fine goal scoring record of this year's league campaign as well with the third. So you're 3-6 to 9 points up at half time. You're looking good, you're looking comfortable, the plan seems to be working. Kerry come out a transformed team in the second half. They set about the task of eating into the Dublin lead quite early. With 13 minutes to go, the sides are level. You think, well, which way is this going to go now? And who is the victory of more significance to in the long run? Dublin get a penalty, which Costello sticks away well, as he did in Roscommon the previous week. The 3 points up, you think they should be able to close out the game, but there's something about these Kerry boys this year. They just weren't going to leave Semple Stadium without something last week, and they were initially denied by Evan Comerford, the Ballymun netminder, for a goal, but shortly after that they were awarded the penalty, which Clifford stuck away well to earn. I think, you know, in fairness, a deserved draw for them. Would have been harsh on either team, I think, overall, to have lost that game last week.
But I think it's a massive psychological advantage for Kerry not to have let that game go and to keep battling to the end.
Very much so.
Later on in the championship,
very much so. It was a huge psychological thing for them last Sunday to come away with that point. They're playing Roscommon in their final Division 1 South game tomorrow, which they should win and win comfortably. They are the defending league champions, of course, so they'll be going on to defend their title comfortably enough there tomorrow. Dublin have to go to Galway tomorrow. So to get a positive result there would also see them qualify for the last four of the competition as well. Great competition, I think, this year, Reg. You know, the new format with only sort of 4 teams in it, you know. You play 3 games, you know, where you are. So every game tomorrow has some significance attached to it, which wouldn't necessarily have been the case, and certainly wouldn't have been the case under the old system, because we would have had quite a lot of dead rubbers going into the last day.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I read earlier this morning, Tomás O'Shea had a great piece in the Irish Independent, and the headline is, "We have to let the game we all love breathe again." And his main gripe, and he's been going on about it for a long time, is the mark, but that's also added to by the advantage rule and the cynical foul rule. So the mark, the advantage rule, and the cynical foul rule, those three main things he seems to think are stifling the game and are killing the game. I don't like the mark rule. I 100% agree. I think that's rubbish myself. I think it's just, I hate this stop-start stuff. I love the flow to a game, you know. Are they going to be reviewed? Are they going to maybe look at this and change it back?
Yeah, they may do, but they're there for the foreseeable. And I agree with you certainly on the mark rule. It does, as you say, introduce a stop-start nature to the game. And also, if you have quality forwards 40, 50 yards out from goal, it gives them straightforward scoring opportunities, which they would have to work so much harder in a normal situation to gain. I'm completely in favour of the rule in relation to cynical play. Absolutely, we have to stamp that out from the game, and defenders are going to have to cope with it, going to have to learn how to get around it, and coaches are going to have to coach the players to get around it as well. So it's a new challenge for everybody, but nothing is perfect in the game. It's worth trying certain things, but I certainly agree with you on the advanced rule mark, definitely.
Yeah, okay, well, hopefully they will have a look at that, because it is very annoying to watch. Okay, the ladies had a great win over Waterford, and huge one for them tonight. They play Cork, and you were telling me, that they're down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh for this one.
Yes, they are. Well, they started their campaign last week against Waterford. They're quite similar to the Hurlers, Reg, because it was a championship rehearsal for them last week as well, because Waterford are in their group later in the summer as well. But yeah, a 6-15 to 2-12 victory over Waterford at Parnell Park last week. We spoke about Hannah Tyrrell, who had returned to the inter-county fold after her spell with the Irish rugby team. And I see during the week she announced her retirement from that. So you were asking that question last week.
Interesting,
so
yeah.
Hannah has announced that retirement. So she's fully committed to Dublin Ladies. She scored a fine goal. Niamh Heatherton got a goal as well. Great to see her in the score sheet. Her brother John had come on for the hurlers the day before and clipped over a couple of points in Parnell Park. Sinéad Héireann with 1-7, Lindsay David, Cuiva O'Connor, and Orla Nolan as well. A special mention for Orla from Ballantyre St John's, the county junior champions. She won an All-Ireland medal with the team last year. She got a start last week and she scored a goal as well. So 6-15 to 2-12, great win. And as you say, down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this evening, which is a historical occasion, because in all the years and all the great rivalry between Dublin and Cork going back as far as 2005, they've never played each other in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, either the old Páirc Uí Chaoimh or what would be the new Páirc Uí Chaoimh this evening. So it's a fantastic occasion for all those players to look forward to this evening. And you're set for a battle royal from 7:35.
And how is that? Just because the ladies' game didn't have enough of a standing to be put in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, was it?
Yeah, that's basically it, you know. And the relationship maybe between the men's board and the ladies' board perhaps mightn't have been as strong as it is now. So I think that the previous county board chairperson, Tracy Kennedy, who we had on this show last year, maybe the year before when she got the job first, did a lot of work behind the scenes, and now it's fantastic. Now, no disrespect to Mallow and CIT and other places like that in Cork, no more than, you know, DCU here in Dublin or Naomh Maranorga, Ballyboy, St. Enda's. You want to be playing your games in the top grounds, and they deserve to be playing in the top grounds. They did it last week in Parnell Park. They're doing it this evening in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and please God, next Saturday evening we'll all be back down in Semple Stadium again with them for their final group game.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, the bottom line is, as a player growing up throughout your life, you dream of playing in places like Croke Park, Semple Stadium, Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Lansdowne Road, the Aviva, wherever it might be. So, you know, there's times and places for everything else, but, you know, you want to play in the best venues and the best
Cork,
things.
The Cork girls were, I mean, that successful team, Reg, from 05 to 2016, I think they might have only played once in Páirc Uí Chaoimh themselves.
Yeah.
So that says a lot too. But they did play Tipperary there last week, so they have their bearings in the ground.
In the ground,
so,
yeah.
And really, I know the Champions League final is the big one tonight, and most focus will be on that. But I'm on my way to Cork, and certainly looking forward to that one this evening.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Declan, great work on the GAA again. You're going to stay with me now. We're going to be talking football in a few moments with Alan Cawley, and we'll review the League of Ireland and Sligo as they sit happily at the top of the table. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news. Time for football now. I'm delighted to be joined by the host of Cawley's Call, Mr. Alan Cawley himself. Morning, Alan. Sligo top of the league.
Good morning, Reggie. Sligo top of the league, Reggie. I tell you what, the good times are back, Reggie. The good times are back.
Asher, it's in the bag now. There's no catching you. 4 points clear.
They're flying, Reggie, to be fair. And I suppose you look at the game last night, the road their luck at times, you would have to say that. Towards the end, they're obviously down to 10 men. And John Mahan, Ed McGinty, the goalkeeper, pulled off a couple of unbelievable saves, one in particular near the end. And in fairness to Finn Harps, they played quite well, especially in the first half. But I think coming off the week that Sligo Rovers had, three games in a week, they played Longford last Friday, obviously the big game against Shamrock Rovers on Monday, and then to go away to Finn Harps and grind out the win like they did, they deserve huge credit, Reggie, and that's five wins on the bounce. As you say, it's put them 4 points clear of Shamrock Rovers. And to me, they're over exceeding expectations at the moment, because I would have been happy with them finishing in the top three this year. But the fact that they're sitting on top, they've beaten Shamrock Rovers now, as I said, Monday. It's still early days, but they've given themselves an unbelievable chance, and it sets it up lovely now for after the break for them to really go after this league title.
Alan, good morning to you. Declan here.
Morning, Declan.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Sir Declan, I just outlined all the reasons why I'm good.
Yes, you have, in fairness. But you also said something off air, which we're not going to repeat. But just on the issue of the break, Alan, you mentioned Sligo have momentum there, which they obviously have. The team just below them, Shamrock Rovers, don't have it in terms of results. So how is the break going to affect things? Now, Rovers play Longford this evening, of course, so should get within a point or so of Sligo tonight. But how will the break, the momentum of it, affect things, do you think?
Yeah, it could be a huge factor, Declan, and I'm not for the break. I don't like it at all. Obviously, as you remember, when it was brought in initially back the time Ireland were in the Euros, it made sense to have a break around that time with us competing in a major tournament. But now I feel as though the last number of years we're having a break for the sake of having a break, and I don't think there's any need for it whatsoever. As you say, you look at it from both perspectives, from Sligo Rovers perspective, they don't want the break, the huge momentum, the five wins on the bounce, the ride and hide are positive, everything is good at the moment in the camp, and they'd want to keep the games going. Whereas on the other side of the coin, you look at Shamrock Rovers, and Stephen Bradley is probably happy of the break because they can get players back, because they have had a few injuries of late, and as you say, they've a couple of defeats as well, and the momentum has been halted. So from both perspectives, there's different views, but overall in the league in general, Declan, I don't like the break at all. I don't think there's any need for it. We want professional football in this country. That's what the players are. It's the elite level that you can play at. And I think carry on. I don't think there's a need for the break at all.
Rovers have Longford, of course, at 4 o'clock today. And it's becoming an absolute must win for them at this stage because they haven't had that good of a run recently, as you were talking about there. It puts them right back in touching distance again. But a lot of pressure on them. Longford down the bottom of the table. So they'll be expected to get a big result.
It will, Reggie, yeah, and you fancy them. Obviously, I think it's a good fixture for them coming off the back of two defeats, because they lost to Dundalk last week, and obviously Sligo Rovers on Monday night as well. So, as I say, their progress has been halted. They were on an unbeaten run of 33 games before that. So, I think this fixture is probably a good one for them at the time it's coming. And then, as I say, they'll go into the break if they get the 3 points, only a point behind Sligo Rovers, with all the players to come back, Richie Towell to come back. I still think Shamrock Rovers are the favourites, Reggie, and that's not me kind of trying to play games or by anything in terms of the Sligo Rovers angle. Mm. I said they were the favourites at the start. I still think they're the favourites. But the fact that Sligo Rovers have had such a brilliant start to the season, I think it gives Shamrock Rovers plenty to think about. I was disappointed St. Pat's lost last night as well, because I want to see as many teams up there as possible fighting it out, and I think that's good for the league in general. But as I say, Shamrock Rovers have plenty to think about with the emergence of Sligo Rovers this year, and obviously Pat's as well.
Yeah, Pat's will be disappointed. A home loss like that to Dundalk 2-0. I heard David Kelly on earlier. You could hear the pain in his voice. That was another golden opportunity slipped up by them.
Yeah, it was, Reggie, because that's the one thing, like, I suppose when you are in the title race, you have to do the business yourself and hang on the coattails of the leaders as much as possible and give yourself a fighting chance coming down the home stretch. And if they keep losing games like that, particularly against Dundalk, because Dundalk, as we know, have all their issues, all the troubles, but they pulled out a brilliant result against Shamrock Rovers last Friday. Then they got hammered by Bowes on Monday. So St. Pat's probably went into that thinking, like, we've a great opportunity here of getting the 3 points. So they'll be disappointed that they did lose. But I think overall for St. Pat's, to be fair to Stevie O'Donnell, he'd be delighted with the start that they've made. And they are in touch and distance, but they just need to improve on their consistency. Because if you are going to be title contenders, as you know, Reggie, you have to stay in the race as long as possible and give yourself a chance. And if you run into spells where you're inconsistent and you're winning two games and losing the odd game here and there, that just won't cut it, especially with the form that Sligo Rovers are in. And in fairness to Shamrock Rovers, if they win today, they're capable of going on another 10-12 game unbeaten run as well. So I think St. Pat's just have to improve on their consistency.
And of course, Dundalk no closer to appointing a new manager either, as Jim McGilton was saying to us after the game last night. But as a player, Alan, how do you explain what you spoke about there? The victory over Rovers last Friday at home, and then to come a few miles down the motorway on Monday and get beaten 5-1 by Bohemians. How does that happen?
Yeah, it's impossible to explain, really, Declan. And I suppose it just fits with the crazy season that we've seen with Dundalk, both on and off the pitch. But those results are absolutely bonkers, because to put in such a good performance against Shamrock Rovers last week and then to go to Bowes and get absolutely hammered. Now, to be fair to Bowes, I've seen them a lot and they've been playing quite well. I felt the drubbing for some team was coming from Bowes. I didn't think it would be Dundalk, especially after them beating Shamrock Rovers. But then to go to Inchicore and win last night. So it just goes to prove, I think, that the squad of players is still very much there, Declan. It's just, as you said, they need to get a manager in place as soon as possible. I know you've been saying that over the last 2 or 3 weeks. I don't know what the delay is. I'd like to think the delay is a good thing if they're holding out for the right man and they're really taking their time in terms of making sure to get the right man. But the longer it goes on, I don't think that's good. But it just proves, as I say, that the players are there, the squad is there, that if they do get a manager in, they can be title contenders very much so again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll see where it all goes to. Now, later on tonight, of course, everybody's attention is going to be on the Champions League final. Cracking all-English affair as we see City taking on Chelsea. I was talking to Ken earlier about it. I fancy Chelsea. He thinks it's going to be City. How do you lie?
I'm really looking forward to the game, Reggie. I think it's going to be a cracker. The fact that there's two English teams as well, I think from our interest, the fact that we all tune into the Premier League, I think that adds a little bit to it as well. You'd have to say City are the favourites, but the one thing with Chelsea since Tuchel has taken over is beating City twice, and I think Tuchel is in Pep's head. I don't know if you've watched the documentary, Reggie, the Amazon Prime one, and it was around the time when Liverpool were emerging as real kind of contenders to Man City's reign at the top. And as we all know, they overtook them last year. But there was a passage in that documentary where Pep Guardiola and his staff, they were getting ready to play Everton, and they were in Goodison Park in the dressing room. But they must have spent 15 minutes before the match, just themselves in the dressing room while the players were warming up, discussing Liverpool's front three and how much of a threat and a danger to them. Because Liverpool at that point were in Pep's head. And I think Tuchel is in Pep's head as well. So I think it gives them a huge chance, Chelsea. They've obviously beaten them twice. They shouldn't hold any fear going against Man City. As I say, City are the favourites, but I think it could be a cracker. And I could nearly side with you on this, Reggie. I think Chelsea actually could get the job done. And I think, in fairness to Tuchel, since he's come in, he's done an unbelievable job. And it would be a very fitting end to the season for him. But on the other hand, I think the business that Pep has done since he's come in, that'd be the strawberries on top, really, winning the Champions League for Man City with him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. They're favourites. I don't question that whatsoever. But I just refer back to the two league games, as you mentioned. And I just thought, in particular, in the second one, the style of football that they played, the speed that they played, and the confidence that they played with. If Tuchel can tell those players to go out tonight and say to them, look, you're underdogs, you've nothing to lose, go for it. Enjoy yourselves, play the football that you know that you can. I think that might catch City on the hop.
Yeah, well, they have the players, as we know, as you said, they've proved already in the games, and I think that's probably what's going to be the most interesting thing about it, tactically, how they set up, because in the two games that we've seen already in recent times with them, I think Tuchel has got the better of Pep, not just with the result, but tactically as well, and how he set the team up. So you would like to think Pep will have something in his head now, obviously a plan to counter-attack that, and it'll be interesting to see how he does set up, but certainly you would like to think it'll be a similar pattern, that City will dominate possession like we see in most of the games, but Chelsea are so dangerous on the counter-attack, and if City do play that high line, you look at the likes of Werner, who's such a threat in behind. I know he hasn't got the goals this year, but he's such a threat to Man City, because if they do play that high line like we see most weeks with them, anything over the top at all, they're very vulnerable, especially down the left channel where you have maybe Walker and Stones. Now, Walker is very quick and his recovery runs are very good, but I think Stones at times balls over the top, particularly in that channel. He is very vulnerable. I also think there's an added layer to it, Reggie, with the fact that it's the emergence of the young English talent. Mm-hmm. And you look at Foden and Mount, two stars, absolute up-and-coming stars. I think Foden could be a superstar. I think Mount is an unbelievable player. And I think those two will have a huge bearing on the game as well. And I think it's brilliant that two young lads who have come through the youth setup, the academy at both clubs, are going out in the biggest showpiece occasion of them all. And they're two of the main men on the night as well. So I'm really going to focus on how they play. And I'd love to see Foden turn it on tonight. I think he's going to be a superstar, Reggie.
No question about it. It would be fantastic to see. I think you're right there. Everybody's talking about him. I think that's going to be the case. Podcast, who have you got on this week?
Declan, like this one, Owen Doyle is back for his summer holidays and he's joining us in studio as well. He's had a great season again, banging in goals as he always does. So, and also Gary Twigg is coming on, and he definitely like Gary Twigg also.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, Alan, if you can get an opinion on Lee Power from Owen Doyle, if you can. I'd be interested in that one.
It would be an interesting viewpoint as well, I'd say, Declan, the view on him.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Alan, that's absolutely brilliant chatting to you again. Good luck with the podcast during the week, and I look forward to listening to it, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Brilliant, thanks a million, lads.
Thanks a lot. That's Alan Cawley there giving us his thoughts on the Champions League and the League of Ireland. But that's all we've got time for on this week's show. As always, the time has flown. Thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producer, Jane McNamara, and I'd also like to thank all of our guests who joined us on the show today, and Declan for coming into the studio. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.